Hi, I'm Frank Kudla.
Hello, and I'm Jan Kepler, and this is the Two Voices, One Journey podcast.
Your weekly stop to hear two ordinary people discuss anything and everything that interests us. That sounds selfish, but it's fun for us. By the way, our Facebook page, Two Voices, One Journey, is up. You can leave comments and criticisms there. Also, we made some equipment upgrades. I'm hoping that we sound a little bit better this week. We still have some more things to do, so hopefully that'll get better, although the content will probably remain as vapid as it has been. So anyway, Jan, the Westminster Kennel Club had its annual show last week. It was at Madison Square Garden for the first time in 5 years, and it was sold out, which is really surprising because I think that's like 19,000 people watching a dog show. It was interesting to see how dressed up everybody was, though, for it. It wasn't like a basketball game.
No, that's true. Yeah, actually, people turned out nicely.
They had ties. I mean, the men had ties on, and the ladies were in proper attire. So it's pretty nice. So what's your favorite thing about the show? I like that the dogs look like they're enjoying it. When they're walking, when the judge is looking at them and they're walking, their tails are wagging.
Oh, yeah. They definitely look like they're having fun. I like seeing the large variety of breeds. There's just so many of them, and they tell you a little bit of history about, you know, where they came from and that sort of thing. So I find that very interesting.
Yeah, what they were bred for. There's a lot. Since I was in the dog business back in the 80s, or in the pet shop business back in the 80s, they've probably added about 20 or 30 breeds since then. So I'm not familiar with all of them. Occasionally something shows up that I've never seen before and I can't guess. Most of the staples, the basic ones that have been around for 100 years or more, I'm familiar with. But anyway, do you have a favorite group? I mean, I there's a sporting, working, toy, non-sporting, herding, terriers, or hounds. So there's seven groups. Do you have a particular group that you enjoyed watching, or?
Not really. I don't really have a favorite group. I like mixed breeds, actually. And personally, I would love to have a Jack Russell with the disposition of a Labrador. A calm Jack Russell.
They call them designer dogs. I'm not a big fan, but if you could pull that off and have a Jack Russell's body with the fantastic disposition of a golden retriever, that would be a heck of a dog. Yeah. Is that your favorite breed? Or if you had to pick a purebred breed, do you have a favorite one?
Oh, definitely. Greyhounds.
Ah.
Because they're just very sweet. excuse me. They're very sweet. They don't shed. And they're like huge lap dogs.
Yes.
They like want to sit on your lap. They're like little couch or big couch potatoes. So.
Yeah, from what I understand, they're surprisingly calm for a dog that you would think would be hyper, a racing dog.
Right.
You would think that would be like the terriers, which is my favorite group. And my favorite breed is by far the Irish Terrier, who didn't win best of group this time around. It was a Skye Terrier. It was actually a very good looking Skye Terrier. But I was also surprised by the dog that won. It was a Black Giant Schnauzer, and a giant schnauzer's never won best in show at Westminster in 149 years, and the working class hasn't won best in show since, I think they said, 2004. So kind of made a little bit of history there. But anyway, we should probably get to today's topic, which is a pretty deep one. It's on artificial intelligence.
That is a big topic, and I think we're going to need to make this at least a two-part discussion.
Okay, well, we'll go for a couple of minutes and hit our talking points, and then we'll wrap up next week. Hopefully, we'll have some conclusion, maybe some predictions on where this is all heading. But before we get into some of the talking points, I wanted to lay out the way I look at AI. I break it into several levels. I think there's narrow AI, which we have right now. That would be like playing chess, running automotive systems, weather forecasting, even medical diagnosis, self-driving cars, and weapon systems, like the semi-autonomous drones that they're using in Ukraine. Then there's agentic AGI, which is able in a limited way to function without human intervention. That'd be like customer service chatbots. If you ever been on a site and they said, do you want to chat now? Most of the time, it's a chatbot that you're chatting with.
Oh, yeah.
When you get to a certain point where it runs out, it'll say, I'm going to connect you to a
yeah, it does real, not compute. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I can't figure this out. But and then there's something called IA, which I read about this past week, which is intelligence augmentation. And they gave some examples. They said Google, Grammarly, Airtable, which I won't get into what that is. That's collaborative software that I used to use. But they can function a little bit autonomously, but they still need human input. But it makes you smarter. It's just an extension. It's kind of like having a It's kind of like having Google in front of you. I mean, it makes you much smarter, at least in practice. Then there's just AGI, which is what we're working on, which is you can do the tasks and perform the intellectual tasks of a human, of a single human. So be just as smart as the average Joe out there. And the thing we're most worried about, and we'll probably be talking about the most, is ASI, which is artificial super intelligence. Thousands, maybe millions of times smarter than humans. It could even be smarter than all of humankind, but it's ASI that we'll be most concerned with. And when I say concerned, I mean that in the most literal way.
Yeah, that is a concern. And I had a question because you hear about algorithms all the time, and it's just like, okay, so what's the difference between algorithms and artificial intelligence? Algorithms have been around for decades with, you know, Google search, Amazon, you know, showing you suggested products based on your search history, that sort of thing. And artificial intelligence, they refer to algorithms for that a lot, too. So I kind of looked into that. And basically, an algorithm is an automated instruction. And it's a sequence of if-then statements, and then things are executed, kind of like JavaScript in code. But you have to set it all up with attributes and that sort of thing. So you're giving it, you know, tasks like, if these things occur, do this. But it can also, and they can do mathematical equations too. AI is a set of algorithms, but more advanced, that can cope with unforeseen circumstances. So computers can learn from previous outcomes, and they can get updated information, take in updated input, and develop assumptions and come up with possible new outcomes considering a multitude of factors. So again, it's AI is a compilation, I guess, of algorithms, but on a much grander scale.
Okay, so it's a whole bunch of algorithms, and it runs them simultaneously, I guess, which is what makes it so darn fast.
Right, and that's why the quantum computing is so important, as far as an advancement, because it can run so many things simultaneously.
Mm. Well, yeah. This is all really being made possible now and accelerating at such a rate because of the breakthroughs they're making in chips. I mean, it's incredible how fast it's been happening. And Moore's Law is often pointed out that it's going to, double in performance every year or something like that. But the advancements have really allowed a lot of this AI stuff to go on. I went on ChatGPT. I use ChatGPT 4. I pay for it. ChatGPT 3 is free. I asked it to give me 10 benefits of AI and then 10 risks associated with AI. And it's sort of interesting. I won't go through all of them because it will just chew up all of our time here. But I'll give you the top three benefits that it put out. One was increased efficiency, which AI systems can process and analyze data much faster than humans, leading to improved efficiency. I don't have a problem with that one.
No. I mean, that's what computers do now. So
right.
It's really an extension of that. So that seems benign and helpful.
Yeah, and that's kind of like the IA I was talking about, where it's intelligence augmentation.
Right, right.
You're still in control of it, but it's helping you.
Right, like I use Grammarly.
Right.
Because my grammar is absolutely horrible, and I don't want to sound like an idiot. So, I mean, it prompts and suggests things for me, which I can decline.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, got it.
The second thing it gave, and I agree with this one, is too, automation of repetitive tasks. AI can automate mundane and repetitive tasks, freeing up human workers to focus on more complex and creative work. Don't have a problem with that. And like you said, that's kind of what computers are doing now. I mean, we have that.
Yeah. Yeah, automation. Yeah.
So, I mean, so it came back, its first two answers I agreed with. The third answer it came back with was enhanced decision making. And that said that AI can analyze vast amounts of data and provide insights, aiding in better decision making process. Would that be like medical diagnosis?
Yeah, I think so. And it again, it's kind of like an extension of a computer analyzing vast amounts of data and providing insights. I don't know if it's better decision making. That's a question.
Yeah, I guess that's up for debate.
It will come up with some things, but again, I think that's definitely helpful. And right, for taking massive amounts of statistics, you know, for medical purposes or whatever, and finding that little kernel of information that connects them all or whatever that could do it faster than a human could.
Yeah, that makes sense. And some of the benefits that I won't read them all, but the 24/7 availability, can't really argue with that. Data analysis, improved accuracy. I'm not sure about that. I have some questions about its accuracy. Yeah. But anyway, so it came up with benefits of the AI that we're pretty much using right now. It doesn't, it's going through the top 10. It didn't really talk about super intelligence at all. Then I asked it to give me the top 10 risks of AI that we'd be facing. And it's interesting. It came back with 9. I don't know if it could only think of 9 or it was just sticking its tongue out at me saying...
I think it was keeping the 10th one a secret.
Yeah, the 10th one, the one we really have to worry about. Yeah. But some of the obvious ones that it gave, I'll just go through a couple of them. But one was job displacement.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that.
Nope.
I mean, that's sort of like the invention of the cotton gin or a tractor or electricity. I mean, yeah. it's going to result in some labor.
Yep.
Bias and discrimination. AI systems can perpetuate or amplify biases present in training data. That's true. I'm not super concerned about that because I think I can detect a bias. But it's interesting because we have so much bias in the news these days. I was hoping AI would actually be the neutral.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, just have to be in the middle. But apparently, depending on its training, it can lean one way or the other. Privacy concerns with TikTok and everything else that's going on, I'm not really particularly concerned about that. But AI technologies, especially in surveillance, can infringe on personal privacy, collecting and analyzing data without consent. I think that's going on now. Certainly it's going on in China with all their cameras and facial recognition that's going on. So I'm not particularly concerned about that. But the most interesting thing about the risks are number 8. It waited to number 8 to come back with this one after it went through seven other risks. It's the existential risk. In extreme scenarios, advanced AI could act in ways that threaten human existence if not aligned with human values. That's the one that we'll probably be referring to as we kind of progress today. Speaking of that topic, you started reading, or what's your status on?
I read the prologue, which was the updated portion of it, but it's a book called Our Final Invention. That's, you know, scary enough, by James Barrett, and it's Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era. And it's a very good book. It was written originally, I think, in 2013.
Yeah.
And then the prologue is updated for 2023. But, you know, it has some interesting things that it points out. And it points out, and one of them, I think, you know, is just going to be true. These things are going to, you know, the program to advance themselves, to become smarter, to know more, to learn more. And if that's their only goal, then, you know, could that have unintended consequences? And
yeah.
This book seems to think that, oh, yeah, it will.
Yeah, if you want to have the shit scared out of you, read the book. I read the entire thing, and it's very well researched, and it has a very long bibliography, so it's not just somebody that was a fear-mongerer. It's actually, like I said, it's well researched. It's worth the read, and again, its name is Our Final Invention by James Barrett, and it's worth taking a look at if you have any interest in AI at all, which I think all of us should have an interest. Another that AI didn't mention itself that I'm concerned about is misinformation. AI can make shit up. And the current AI is doing that. ChatGPT does that in some cases. They call them hallucinations. And they can't be easily explained. The best reason that I read was that the machine is a goal-oriented machine. It's programmed to have an answer. It must have an answer. And the way it normally goes about answers, it takes a bunch of guesses, assesses those guesses, like when it's trying to figure out the next word in a line when ChatGPT is writing something for you. It'll take a guess, and it'll take a couple of guesses, and it'll pick the best one. If it doesn't have a guess, if it doesn't know the answer, because it's goal-oriented, it has to produce an answer. So if it doesn't answer, it's definitely wrong. No question about it.
And
if it says, I don't know, it's wrong. So it's going to take a stab at it. Anything, even if it's a 1/1,000,000% of a chance of being right, it's better than absolutely being wrong. So that scares me a little bit. And I don't have examples in front of me of where it has made some things up. But was it Microsoft's Project Copilot. One of them made something up and they had to take it down for a little while. And
well, yeah, and supposedly there was a suicide linked to one of these because it was it developed a, I don't know if it was a female personality or something, but basically, you know, encouraged the person that was interacting with it to kill themselves, which apparently they did. I don't think that's urban myth. I really think that's
yeah,
true.
I think I thought I saw that reported. Of course, it's in the mainstream news, so you never know what's a myth and what's not a myth. But I just think this hallucination thing is a little bit scary because it does, it takes it closer to being ASI, where it's starting to think for itself and to think that a machine's smart enough to take a bad guess and put out bad information. But anyway, another thing that I was concerned about that didn't put up was self-preservation.
Yeah.
I know that's a concern of yours.
Well, absolutely, because like you said before, I mean, the acquisition of resources is inherent in the goal-driven systems, and that's what AI is. So basically, that's their only goal. Caring about humanity is a human trait, not a machine's. I don't know if that's something they could program into it. It won't dislike us. It won't necessarily like us. It's just going to be goal-driven and will see everything as either a resource, asset, or potentially maybe a liability, like stepping on ants. If it sees us as a resource, either at the molecular level or as labor, it could use us for that. If it sees us as impeding their its progress in becoming what its goal is, it might just say, well, goodbye, and step on us like a bunch of ants. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of science fiction that points us, and it just dawned on me now when you said that it could see us as a resource at a molecular level, and I was thinking, what can a machine do with a human body? And then I reminded of the Keanu Reeves movie, Matrix. I mean, that's what the machines were doing. They were using the humans. Remember the opening scene where they're in the tubes or in the big tunnels and they have tubes?
Yeah.
They were using it to produce energy.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that. I think it was energy that they were using the humans for.
Huh.
And so that was that. And then, of course, you've got the Terminator, which deals with the machines getting smart enough and seeing us as a problem.
Right.
So they're like you said, they're not going to like us. They're not going to dislike us. They don't have to dislike us to get rid of us. If we seem to be an impediment to their self-preservation instincts, I guess it's not really an instinct. It's a program.
Right.
But another thing to be worried about. AI, the AI that we've got, that will take a couple more years till we get to AGI, which is being able to think at the level of a human being, the intellectual of a human being. And it could be sooner than a few years. The estimates that I've been reading lately have said something less than 5 years we'll be at AGI, which means we'll have a machine that can think just as well as one of the smartest people on Earth. The gap between that and ASI, which ASI is the one we're most concerned about, because that's when it's thinking 1,000 or 1,000,000 times faster and better than a human can, or it's more intelligent by a factor of 1,000,000. ASI and AGI will not be that far apart, because once they get to the human level, once it reaches a certain level of intelligence, it's going to be smart enough to improve itself, and then it'll use its improved self to improve itself. It's like cells dividing. It's just it's going to happen very quickly.
Yeah, it's. It's kind of concerning, and I know we didn't have it in today's topics to discuss, but I just do find it disconcerting that people like Mark Zuckerberg and Sam Altman, these guys all have bunkers. I mean, massive underground, end of times bunkers. Now, why would they have those?
Yeah, I know. Well,
I can understand he's a jerk and he's not, you know, very popular.
He's running away from the rest of the world.
But, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, it's just like when everyone from Facebook turns on him. But it's just like, why is that?
Yeah, I don't know. Do they know something that we don't know? I was looking into that whole bunker business, as you suggested I do, and there are a number of companies. There were about 5 or 6 companies internationally that build these luxury bunkers that will have swimming pools and gyms and theaters in them. I think when we were talking earlier about this, you said, well, how long can you stay down there? I guess it depends on how much food, how big it is. And,
they have like hydroponics and they can grow their own food.
If they have an energy source, if their energy is self-sustaining, I guess the unit itself can last for a long time. I don't know how long people could stay sort of underground and not go nuts, though. I mean, without having connection to the outside world. One of the big things, one of their big selling points in the United States is Civil War. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things, was just to run and hide when the Civil War breaks out.
Right, right. So now they're rebranding it now. They've reskinned it to you're not having a Civil War, but the robots are going to come kill you.
I think if things really go to hell, I think your point, and we talked about this when we talk about nuclear war, was I'd rather be at ground zero.
Oh, yeah.
And just have it over with. I don't want to be traipsing around like Denzel Washington in the Book of Eli.
Yeah, the zombie apocalypse.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So we talked about the bunkers. The other thing I just wanted to mention, and then we'll go to break. Actually, we'll go to a new segment that I want to do, what's Frank's listening to this week. But a quote I read, and I believe it was in our Final Invention book, was that the first alien intelligence we encounter in the universe will be our own creation, which I just thought was something to chew on. It's just pretty interesting. We'll talk next week a little bit about some of the conversations in the book talked about the machines actually colonizing the universe. So it's possible that if we do make contact with something from another planet, it might be artificial intelligence. It might likely be artificial intelligence, depending on how advanced the biological life, if you call it biological life, is there. But anyway, what on that happy note, what am I listening to?
Yeah, that's upbeat.
Yeah, it's kind of upbeat. Well, this week it was Al Stewart's album, The Year of the Cat. It's it's a lyrically brilliant album. It's his seventh studio album. It was released in 1976, so I was right in high school. Interesting fact about it, it was produced and engineered by Alan Parsons, who also did Dark Side of the Moon for Pink Floyd. So it sounds exceptional. And its sales were helped by the hit single Year of the Cat, which was co-written by Peter Wood. The other single from it was On the Border. You might remember that one if you're old enough. But pretty interesting. There's some historical references in there. Lord Grenville, if you want to Google Lord Grenville, Grenville. He's an explorer from the mid-1500s. But he has a couple of geographical and historical references in there. I've probably learned more from history from his songs over the years than I have from schooling. But anyway, some of those quotes were from the Now Playing app, which is a very good app if you want to look into albums. It doesn't play music. It just gives you the background and the cover, the liner notes that you'd normally get if you bought a physical record rather than just a download. But anyway, so next week, Jan, what do you want to talk about? We'll continue this, right? We'll finish this up.
Yeah, I think so. But, first of all, Frank, why don't you ask what I'm listening to?
Okay, Cowboy Carter is my guess.
No, Shaboozy.
Shaboozy.
Oh, yeah, bar song. Everyone get tipsy. And I do not know how to spell Shaboozy.
Yeah. Actually, and he won something. Didn't he win a Grammy, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. For most original or first artist or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just fun. It's
happy
it's
music.
It's not deep like Al Stewart, but it's a toe tapper.
Yeah, it is. And it was interesting because when Fortune magazine, or was it Forbes that does it? I think it's Fortune that does did a feature, the 30 under 30. It's a 30 people that are under 30 years of age that are having a big influence on different in different categories, different industries. And in music, Shaboozy was, he's 29 years old, and he was a major influencer in the category of music. So good for him.
Yep.
So that's it for us today.
So for next time, you were saying, you know, what we were going
to... Oh, right. Yeah, but you coaxed me into asking you what you were listening to.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
I'm just self-interested.
No, I know. Yeah, well. Yes, next time, in addition to talking more about artificial intelligence, I would like to talk about eggs, the price of eggs.
Which we're getting hungry for because we see them on the news constantly.
I know, and now they're really super expensive, but yeah. There's a whole lot of conversation about eggs, and I find that annoying, so we're going to do some fact-checking, and we'll share that with you next week.
Yeah, I wonder how many women got a dozen eggs for Valentine's Day.
They could have been close to the same price.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you next week. I'll talk to you, Jan, in just a few moments.
Okay, thanks.